I'm JP Tuesday.
And I'm Kiki Cannon. As lifelong Disney fans, the work of countless talented Disney creatives have shaped our lives.
Now, as the Disney catalog expands, we're taking a journey through film and television to discover if that spark that shaped us as children lives on in adulthood.
Does your favorite Disney media still cast that same spell? Join us as we find out. We are
Rewatching the Magic. Hi, Kiki.
Hi, Tuesday.
We got some stuff that we have to get through before we get to today's feature. And since we're talking about a Marvel movie, there's some Marvel news. We just actually passed the 13th anniversary of the MCU with the first Iron Man movie. And they released a little video showing the love of the Marvel movies, the footage of the Endgame opening night.
Can I just say something?
Go ahead.
Every time I see that footage of the crowd reaction to that, you know, kind of final battle scene,
mm-hmm.
I get tingles all over my skin. Like that ASMR whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Do you get that? Like, I get the goosebumpies?
I get, like, this very warm, loving feeling. That there's a lot of love in that room, and I just feel it.
Like, it does not matter how many times I see that clip. Every time I see it, my breath just kind of goes out of my body, and my whole body, I have a physical reaction to it. It is the weirdest thing. And it happened again when I watched that video.
Yeah, I mean, I was at the opening night in my theater, and it was just the same thing. The cheers, the big just love for these characters, love for these movies, just united in just these characters, and it's amazing. And some, you know, yeah, it's amazing. Marvel has released the dates for their upcoming movies. The ones for this year we know already. Black Widow in July, Shang-Chi in September, Eternals in November, and Spider-Man No Way Home in December. We knew those. They're coming.
I actually went into a GameStop just the other day. There are already Shang-Chi pop figures on the shelves.
Yeah. The toys are already... I mean, they released the Black Widow figures a year ago when they thought the movie was coming out.
Also relevant to our podcast, I actually saw Disney's Gummy Bears pop figures on the shelves.
Yay.
I was so happy. It made me so happy.
And yeah, so now, but they also gave us the future, the dates that for the future movies. Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness on March 25th. Again, we knew that was coming. Thor Love and Thunder, May 6th. May the 6th be with you with the God of Thunder.
I can't wait for that one. I really want to see that one.
Ever since the rumor started of the return of Jane Foster to the movies, I'm thinking, are they going to make her Thor like in the comics? And seeing Natalie Portman holding up the Mjolnir at San Diego Comic-Con a few years ago, yes, I'm ready for that.
Yes, Natalie Portman and Miu Miu is love.
Yes.
That is the love.
July 8th, Black Panther Wakanda Forever. They have made, you know, Kevin Feige has said that he will not recast T'Challa, Chadwick Boseman, of course, will be passing away last year. We don't know what this movie's going to be about. We know that we heard talks of a Wakanda series happening for Disney Plus. Will that tie into this? Will we see the rise of Shuri as the next Black Panther, like in the comics? Will see a new hero? Who knows? I'm looking forward to seeing what they're going to do with these characters.
After Falcon and Winter Soldier, I think everyone's just down for the Dora Milaje series.
I'm up for it.
Yeah, tell me you would not just watch like a 17 movie series of that's just like a Dora Milaje series.
I'm for it. And November 11th, 2022, The Marvels. Captain Marvel 2 is now The Marvels. as we're not just getting Carol Danvers back, but we're getting the movie premiere of the adult Monica Rambeau fresh out of WandaVision, and Kamala Khan from the Ms. Marvel series, which currently filming and will be on Disney Plus later this year. And the set pieces, the set pictures have leaked of that show showing Kamala Khan's hero outfit, and it looks amazing.
Yeah, really liking it. And they're not even official set pictures either. It was like somebody got some cell phone pics smuggled out. And even from those kind of, you know, quick, you know, you shouldn't be taking these kind of things, that is a really good looking costume. It looks like it fits in the MCU, but it also looks like it fits in the comics.
Yeah, it definitely looks like the costume from the comics has that otherworldly sheen that Carol Danvers' costume does. I can't wait for the series, and can't wait to have three marvelous women share the screen together.
Yeah.
That's all of it. That's 2022. That's next year. Then we move on to the next year, 2023, February 17th, Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, brother.
I love how when it comes to Ant-Man and the Wasp, they're just like, yeah, we're going to make the title as goofy as possible.
Yeah, again, all we know is that they've casted Kang the Conqueror for it. That's all we know.
Yeah.
And finally, May 5th, 2023, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. Looks like they're going to be filming Guardians and Thor back-to-back, since the Guardians are supposed to be in Thor Love and Thunder.
Yeah.
And James Gunn just finished up doing the Suicide Squad, so he's free.
Yeah. Can't and, but, you know, not really our purview, since it's, you know, on another network, as they used to say. Mm-hmm. But, man, that Suicide Squad trailer looked amazing.
The fact that the movie hasn't even debuted yet, and they're giving John Cena his own spinoff show from it.
I mean, if you'd have told me, like, 4 months ago I'd be hyped for a DC thing, I would have punched you.
And they ended the video with the Fantastic Four logo. No date, but it's just them saying, it's coming. The Fantastic Four are coming. No news on Blade, though. That was announced like a year ago, but nothing coming from it since. Maybe that'll be another one of those 2023 movies, but they're not ready to announce it yet.
We did get our first kind of look at the Eternals, didn't we?
Yeah, they showed a few seconds of the Eternals. We get to see Angelina Jolie brandishing a sword.
Yeah, and I think we get like a group shot in there.
Yeah, yeah.
But not really a lot of flavor, kind of, you know, where they're going with it.
It's a very generic line of fight for what you believe in. Typical generic heroic line.
Yeah.
We'll probably get the trailer around the time we get either Black Widow or Shang-Chi. With one of those two movies, we'll get the trailer and we'll see what the film is about. But yeah, the MCU is chugging along. Like, they're making up for the lost time they have. 4 movies a year.
Yeah, I am looking forward to it, and I'm looking forward to the expansion. I want to know more about some of the broader Marvel universe. And yet still no Namor movie.
There's always questions over who has the rights to Namor.
Yeah, I know the history behind that, but it's just it's funny to me, you know.
We got an Aquaman movie before we got a Namor movie.
Who would have guessed? But yeah. Anyway, I'm looking forward to Phase 4 and Phase 24, and you know, I'm looking forward to being 115 and still going out and seeing Marvel movies.
100 years old, opening night of Avengers 26.
You're wheeling me in the middle of my, you know, Alzheimer's, unable to remember my own name, and I'll be like, no, I remember opening night of the Avengers. Like
as soon as that, you like pick up, like, I know that song.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Old nerds.
Old nerds are best nerds. You know it.
Yeah. All right, let's move on. We do have a bit of a downer though to talk about next.
Yeah, unfortunately. We have talked before on this show about the great Billy Hayes, and unfortunately, we have to announce that Billy Hayes left us on April the 29th. It was natural causes. She was 96. We've talked about Billie Hayes before because she worked with Disney on The Black Cauldron. She also she was Orgoch in The Black Cauldron. She also showed up in Tailspin, Darkwing Duck, Bonkers. She did voices for just a really good voice actress that kept showing up. Most people, however, remember her as Witchy Poo in H.R. Puff and Stuff.
Unrelated, but a couple of weeks ago, I was actually searching for, because I remember something. I remember something reminded me of Puff and Stuff. It's like, I wonder if there's anything on YouTube. And someone had uploaded the entire movie, the 1970 Puff and Stuff movie. That movie is a trip.
And it was probably meant to be watched while you're on a trip.
Yeah.
It was probably also made while some people were on a trip. But yeah, Billy, thanks for everything. We will enjoy watching you again and again and again, as will future generations, I am sure. So, yeah, 96. Long, long life there.
Hell of a life there, yeah. So, let's get to what we're doing this month, or the rest of this month. This is something that I've wanted to do for a while. You see, Marvel's Phase 1. One of the weirdest and greatest things about it is how they set up their timeline. So, in the lead up to the first Avengers movie, they released a comic book to sort of streamline, fill in the gaps of the MCU leading up to this movie. And they called this event Fury's Big Week. And it's weird in that they take most of these movies from Phase 1, and it all happens in a 7-day period. So while Iron Man and War Machine are taking care of Whiplash, you got Thor trying to retrieve his hammer from S.H.I.E.L.D. while the Hulk is fighting the Abomination in Harlem. How does that make sense? And that's probably the reason Nick Fury is bald. But it... canonically, that's it. There's a comic book. There's a timeline. There's a very, very detailed timeline that Marvel released themselves, pinpointing every point in those three movies, at least, where they all happen in relation to everything else. And, of course, it all ends with S.H.I.E.L.D. finding Captain America in the ice. And then it leads into the Avengers. So I told this thing to Kiki, and she thought it was crazy. Like, how does that make sense? And we've wanted to do it as a theme month ever since. And we're finally doing it, and here we are. So we got to start this the right way. We got to start this particular episode the right way. Dr. Bruce Banner, physician, scientist. Searching for a way to tap into the hidden strength that all humans have. Then an accidental overdose of gamma radiation alters his body chemistry. And now, when Banner gets angry or enraged, a startling metamorphosis occurs. We are starting off Fury Big Month, as we're calling it, with The Incredible Hulk from 2008.
Tuesday?
Yeah.
Don't make me angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
For this to really get the story, or for me to explain the story, we need to go back a little bit further to 2003. Ang Lee's Hulk from Universal Pictures.
Patootie. No.
It's all right.
No, it's not. You will erase that film from existence.
It made money, though. Enough to make a sequel. Then it got delayed. And delayed again. The way these contracts work with Marvel is that you get the rights to the character and you're getting a certain amount of years to develop your movie. And if you don't develop your movie within a certain amount of time, the rights revert back to Marvel. This is why we saw so many X-Men movies and Spider-Man movies during the 2000s and 2010s, because those two studios wanted to keep the rights to those characters desperately. So they were just making movie after movie after movie just to keep the rights. So, because they couldn't make a sequel within the contracted time, the movies, the rights to the Hulk character revert to Marvel. However, Universal, because they did make that Ang Lee Hulk movie, retain what is called the right of first refusal, meaning that if Marvel wants to make a Hulk movie, they can, but they have to present that movie to Universal for distribution, which was fine when they were independent. Then they got bought by Disney. I don't think Disney's going to work with one of their top competitors. Not only competitors in television, movies, streaming services, and of course, theme parks. So Marvel gets the rights back to the Hulk, and they're already putting together the pieces of their cinematic universe. They already have the first Iron Man movie starting production, and they start the production on Hulk, bringing in Edward Norton to be the lead, be Bruce Banner. And we'll get to our thoughts on the movie in a bit, but I want to skip ahead of that a bit. We never got Edward Norton back for the Avengers. He was eventually recasted with Mark Ruffalo. And the big question was why? There's been a lot of rumors over the years that Norton was difficult to work with, that he's not good with an ensemble cast, that he would want to be the star. The horror stories I've heard of him doing several rewrites to the script, because part of the deal in him doing movies is he gets a certain amount of creative control. He kind of earned that, I'm not going to lie. He's a really good actor. He kind of earned that right, honestly. But there's always been these questions why Edward Norton didn't come back. Eventually, Edward Norton came forward and cleared the record on it. Number one, what he wanted to do with the Hulk was not what Marvel wanted to do with the Hulk. We saw what Marvel did with the Hulk. You're free to have your own opinion on Professor Hulk or Mark Ruffalo's personification of Bruce Banner and the Hulk. The big thing, the major thing of why Norton did not come back, money. Norton wanted more money than Marvel was willing to pay him. And that is something that's going to come up a couple of more times during this month. We'll talk about that next week. Yeah, so Marvel can make a Hulk movie, but Universal has to be the one releasing it. Similar to the deal we have with Disney and Sony, how Marvel can make a Spider-Man movie, but Sony has to release it. And we've known the stories between Disney and Sony over Spider-Man in the last few years. Can you imagine the same thing happening with the Hulk and Universal? So, The Incredible Hulk. Despite it coming out months after the first Iron Man, technically takes place after Iron Man 2. And before Iron Man 2. And during Iron Man 2. In fact, in Iron Man 2, we see the very news broadcast that we see in this movie of the Hulk. Did you see this version of the Hulk in theaters?
Yes. In fact, I have a story about that later. You talked about Going back into how this movie was made, I want to go back even further. You've already referenced it. I want to talk about how loving this movie was to the TV series.
The intro movie, the little opening credit sequence, an almost beat for beat recreation of the intro to the TV show.
Yeah, where they put Edward Norton into the like gamma exposure contraption. They have the lab accident go awry. They use the Lonely Man theme. They use the Lonely Man theme.
And cameos, because we technically get a cameo of Bill Bixby in this movie.
Yeah, they show Courtship of Eddie's father on the TV as he's trying to learn Portuguese. And then later we get Lou Ferrigno as the security guard. He gives him a pizza. So,
And they have that big handshake. It's like passing the baton from one Hulk to the other.
yeah, good man, like.
And it's a blink and you if you're if you didn't not know if you did not know this name, you would not even give a second thought to it. There is a reporter in this movie named Jack McGee. If you're a fan of the old show, you know the name Jack McGee is the reporter that chases Bruce Banner, or David Banner as he was called in the old show, around the world trying to get famous off the story of the Hulk.
It is so awesome how closely they tied it together. Like, we understand the legacy we're stepping into here. Whereas Ang Lee's Hulk was like, I will make the screen look like a comic book page, and then I will do my own thing.
It was a choice.
It was a choice. I'm not saying it was a particularly good choice. It did not work for me.
I didn't
You
mind
know
it.
what? If it worked for you, more power to you. Find joy where you can. I'm really not gonna hate on you for finding your happiness where you can at this point. It's not where I'm at in my life.
Also,
But it did not work for me.
we owe this movie because it invented a word that we use to this day. So after the Ang Lee Hulk movie was dropped, that universe was dropped, and Marvel came back and did their own, they're saying, we're not remaking the Hulk. This is not a remake. This is a reboot. So if you want to know who to blame for the word reboot in movies, this movie, Marvel Studios. Also, there's been questions over, is this movie still canon to the MCU? I'm actually looking at Marvel's website, marvel.com/movies, and it has all the list of every single MCU movie. And right there at the bottom, between Iron Man and Iron Man 2, is 2008's The Incredible Hulk. So Marvel themselves consider this movie canon. There are events in this comic and this movie that are referenced in later movies. When we get to the Avengers, Banner will talk about the last time he was in Harlem. It didn't go so well. The character of General Ross comes back as Secretary Ross in Captain America: Civil War. Blonsky, the Abomination, is confirmed to come back, same actor, for the She-Hulk show. And of course, there was the reference of Bruce jumping out of the plane and, well, splat in Thor Ragnarok.
You know
And one
what?
more thing, one more thing. Trigger warning for our listeners. If you are upset over ending one's life, you might want to skip ahead a few minutes. In the Avengers, Bruce talks about he tried to end his life and the other guy spit out the bullet. There's a deleted scene in this movie that is what that scene is referencing to. It's a scene in the Arctic. Bruce is there. He goes to the top of this mountain. He pulls out a pistol. He's about to shoot himself when he transforms into the Hulk and crushes the gun in his hand, then goes on a rampage. Many people have pointed out, I don't see it. I own this movie on Blu-ray, and I went to go check it out. I don't see it. Supposedly, people say that you can see the body of Captain America in the ice.
It has been officially confirmed. Marvel has confirmed that. I will tell you exactly where it is. There is a slight red blur. Honestly, even in the most like high quality footage of this thing, it does not look like Captain America. They did not do a good job at it. I have seen it. I know what they're talking about. Even once you point it out, it doesn't look like Captain America. It just looks like a red blur. But there is at the kind of, if you freeze it right before the screen goes black, in that deleted scene, like the last, like, you know, second or so, right in the bottom left-hand corner of the screen, there is a red blur in the ice, and that is supposedly the body of Captain America, and Marvel has confirmed that was the intention. That intentional Easter egg they put in that scene.
So, yeah, the reason they found Captain America was because of the Hulk.
Yeah, which does tie into the Fury's Big Week, because in the comic that we keep referencing, the Fury's Big Week comic, which you can probably find online somewhere if you really feel like looking for it, he is attempting to find the body of Captain America when he is pulled away to go deal with all the other mess that goes on in the other movies. And so it does make sense that the events that take place in The Incredible Hulk would then lead to that ice being disturbed and Fury finding the body much faster than he would have at the beginning of the movie.
Also, this is the first mention of the Super Soldier Serum.
It is.
As the retcon here in this film is that the Hulk was the result of an experiment to recreate the Super Soldier Serum. And Blonsky's transformation is a result of him taking a different version of the Super Soldier Serum.
Interestingly, this also ties into the Sony Spider-Man films.
The Mark Webb Spider-Man films? Or the Raimi films?
No, the Spider-Man Homecoming films.
Oh.
Because during the scene where Banner goes in with the pizzas and sneaks into the college, there is a computer nerd, that's all he's credited as. And it is played by the actor Martin Starr, who is later plays the character of Roger Harrington in the Spider-Man movies, who's one of Peter Parker's teachers.
They have retconned
it to be that is the same character, that he met Bruce Banner when he was in college, and then he later went on to teach Peter Parker. So it is another mark that Marvel still considers this movie to be canon, because Feige only confirmed that in 2019. They recast the Hulk, but they are still considering the events of this movie to be canon to the rest of the MCU. Let's just real quick go through the actors that are in these. Most of these are big names. You know them. You love them. So, of course, we've got Ed Norton as Bruce Banner / the Hulk. You know him from Fight Club, American History X.
I am Bruce Banner's repressed rage.
Yeah. you know, he's received a couple of Oscar nominations over the years, of course, for American History X, but also recently for the movie Birdman. He's strangely never won one. That should probably change. I've always kind of liked him as an actor. But anyway, I really liked him as the Hulk, and I was really sad when he was recast, although I really like the Hulk we've got now, you know, no hate. So
yeah.
Worked out fine. Anyway,
speaking of the Hulk,
as Betty Ross, our love interest for the Hulk and one of the scientists who helped create the Hulk, we have Liv Tyler. You know Liv Tyler, probably most famous for being Arwen in Lord of the Rings, but also famous for being the daughter of Steven Tyler from Aerosmith. And, you know, she was in Armageddon, That Thing You Do. You know, recently she did The Leftovers for HBO. And she was in a really good series for Hulu called The Harlots, which I loved.
Kind of wonder what Betty thinks about Bruce and Natasha's relationship.
Yeah. We never really know what happened to Betty. I always kind of wonder if they might get Liv Tyler back.
For the She-Hulk show? Yeah, I want to see her back in the She-Hulk show. See if it happens in that.
That would be interesting.
Because in the comics, Betty Ross becomes the Red She-Hulk. So I wouldn't be against that either.
Yeah. As our kind of overt villain for the piece, as Emil Blonsky / Abomination, we have Tim Roth. Movies like The Cook, the Thief, His Wife and Her Lover, and the really cool Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead film. Then, of course, he worked with Tarantino a lot in Reservoir Dogs, Pulp Fiction, came back for Hateful Eight. So, you know, I really like him because he worked with Tarantino a lot, and I like a lot of Tarantino's films.
And like I said, he's coming back for the She-Hulk show, so let's see where that goes.
Yeah, so is he going to be playing Abomination?
Yes.
They're bringing him back? Okay, good.
I don't know if he's going to be CG Abomination or just reverted Emerald Blonsky, but he's confirmed to be coming back by Feige himself.
Emerald Blonsky, he's going to come back and be like, bam! Sorry. But yeah, so moving on, we don't really have to talk about this guy because we just freaking talked about him in Holes. We got Tim Blake Nelson coming back as Samuel Stearns, aka Mr. Blue. Yeah,
aka the leader.
Yeah, they don't call him that in this.
If we had gotten that sequel, maybe, but who knows?
Yeah, yeah, they don't actually really get to the leader except for, like, the last 2 seconds. They never bring up the name. If you don't know anything about the comics, you don't know where this is going, just based on the film. But, yeah, we talked about Tim Blake Nelson when we talked about him in Holes. He played Pendansky, if you remember that episode. Okay. Now we're going to get to the one that pisses me off. We got Ty Burrell playing the character whose name I don't think we ever get in full in the film. Leonard Sampson.
Doc Sampson.
Doc Sampson. Ty Burrell, you know, because he just starred for years as Phil Dunphy on Modern Family. But he also showed up in Finding Dory again for Disney, and also Muppets Most Wanted for Disney. He's everywhere now. You cannot go anywhere without running into Ty Burrell at this point, which I actually love. He's a really good actor and a really good voice actor, and I love when he shows up anywhere.
Saying a few weeks ago is that you want Ty Burrell to have his own Disney Plus series where he's the psychiatrist for all the superheroes.
Here's the thing. When I rewatched for this episode, I had forgotten he was in this movie, and it wasn't until I was doing the research that I even realized that is supposed to be Doc Sampson. Because I'm rewatching the movie and I'm going, wait, Betty is dating a psychiatrist. Why didn't they just have her date Doc Sampson?
I think maybe there's a deleted scene where he's actually called Dr. Sampson or something. Because he's never really called. I don't remember. I don't think he's ever called by a name in this movie at all.
Yeah, I think she mentions him as like either Leonard or Leo or something. But I don't think they reference the full name in the movie. If they do, I totally missed it, even on the rewatch.
So we got the leader and Doc Sampson, two characters associated with the Hulk that we never get really see their full potential.
Yeah, and I mean, we've talked about this on the show frequently, how all I want is for the MCU to just turn into superheroes in therapy. TM.
Ty Burrell, Disney Plus series. Have him.
I want Ty Burrell to just constantly show up in the MCU treating superhero psychoses. That is all. And I want it to be written by Peter David.
Sure, why not?
No. I mean, that is the best Hulk series ever in the comics, is Peter David's run of Doc Sampson treating Bruce Banner and having him integrating, which they've already done in the movies. Like, I want to see a prequel series set during the blip where Ty Burrell
finds out that he has his next appointment is Bruce Banner, and then here he comes in all Professor Hulked out.
Yeah, it just like I
Bruce, no, you've changed again.
No, I need to see that interim, you know, because we know during the blip he worked on himself and he integrated the Hulk personality and the Banner personality. Doc Sampson in the comics is the person that made that happen. I want to see the prequel series during the blip where that happened. Do that as a Disney Plus series. Make that a thing just for me. I will be the only person interested in watching that, but I will watch it all the time. Okay. And finishing us off, we've got William Hurt. By the way, Doc Sampson isn't just a psychiatrist. He's also a superhero with the powers of the Hulk because he's been around so much gamma radiation. So he's like the Hulk, but less angry.
And really, really long green hair because Samson.
Yeah. I mean, his power, like, don't make me angry. His power is just as his hair gets longer, he gets more buff and stronger. So Ty Burrell with long hair beating people up. Tell me you do not want to see that. It would be awesome. Okay. So, and as General Ross, who is Betty's father and our other antagonist in the film, we have William Hurt.
William Hurt Ross.
Come on.
Yeah. Again, Senator Ross now in the MCU.
Yeah, Senator Ross now. He's been in a lot of stuff. You know, the Spielberg film, AI... He worked with M. Night Shyamalan in The Village. He was in that really bad Ridley Scott Russell Crowe Robin Hood movie. I don't know if he'd want me to mention that. But of course he's also done the big ones that he's done was he got the Oscar for Kiss of the Spider-Woman. Then he got Oscar nominations for Children of a Lesser God, which is an amazing movie. Maybe go watch it. And Broadcast News, which is also a good movie. And maybe go watch that as well. So.
I'm going to be honest. When I saw Captain America Civil War, and then there's William Hurt showing up, and they call him Secretary Ross. Like, oh, the movie is canon. This movie is canon.
Yeah. No. I'm going to say that a lot of people are down on this movie. I personally like it. If you didn't like it, I understand why. I get it. I get why this would not be everybody's cup of tea, especially compared to the rest of the MCU.
Yeah.
I personally kind of dig like 90% of this movie is kind of my thing.
Yeah, I mean, this is still in that era of superhero movies afraid to go full superhero. And much like, you know, the X-Men movies of the time and the previous Hulk movie, kind of, we need to make it grounded in reality. And then Marvel decided, yeah, we're just going to have fun and be fun superhero movies, and all for the better for them.
Yeah, the best parts of this movie are when they let themselves be a little goofier.
Yeah.
When they have jokes and stuff.
I remember laughing. Two points in this movie that I really laughed at was, one, the, you know, Edward Norton, Liv Tyler makeout scene where the heart monitor starts beeping crazy. I can't get excited. And Liv Tyler, Betty Ross just screaming at the cabbie after the crazy ride. And he goes, I can teach you some relaxation exercises for your anger. Oh, shut up.
Yeah, okay. Remember that we are a PG-13 show, primarily for adults, and this is your warning that if you have little ears in the room, you may want to pause, get them out of the room, and then come back to us, because there may be some adult language in this next minute or two. You ready? Okay. So about that first scene you mentioned when they're in the bedroom and they're making out and his heart monitor starts going weird. When I was in the theater watching this film, there weren't a lot of us in the theater. I wasn't watching it on opening night. And also, so this movie got kind of a bad rap pretty quickly. So for some reason, my theater was practically empty when I saw it. So I'm there with a friend of mine, and he and I were in the back of a rather empty theater. We were kind of mystery science theatering the movie, because there was nobody around us to really be mad at us, you know. But it got to that scene, and Edward Norton says, I'm sorry, I can't get excited. And my friend just screams, Hulk cock block! And the entirety of the theater heard him and just died laughing. And in fact, the first time I saw the movie, I didn't even hear Liv Tyler's quiet little, not even a little excited. Like, it just, I totally missed, like, the whole rest of that scene, because the whole theater was just laughing. And it's still, I cannot see that scene without hearing my friend's voice in my head screaming. It was just the perfect timing for that. So there you go. So yeah, let's talk about how he tries to keep the Hulk at bay in this movie. Because yeah, it's kind of a thing we don't see in any other version of the Hulk.
He wears this heart monitor watch on him to monitor his heartbeat, that if it goes above a certain point, it'll start beeping, which tells him to go through these breathing exercises, these comic exercises, so he doesn't transform into the Hulk. We even get a counter at various points in the movie, days without incident, on how long he's kept this up without transforming into the Hulk.
I like that the Hulk is basically a dangerous workplace.
Yeah.
Days without deadly accident at Banner Co.
And he even sees this, well, he's in Brazil, he sees this self-defense guru, I guess, that helps him with these breathing exercises and these rage-reducing exercises. And I'm pretty sure he was only hired because he can do that thing with his stomach.
Well, yeah, the interesting thing is that that guy is a mixed martial artist guy of some note. Mm-hmm. So that's why they hired him for that role. The thing that I find interesting, and at the time it was just a like, oh, he wears a monitor and he wears a, you know. But since then, I have become the Hulk, or at least I have become Bruce Banner, because I have heart issues. And I now have to do all these things to control my heart issues. I actually wear a smartwatch heart monitor to monitor my heart rate. I have a little thing in my heart that gives me breathing exercises to do to control my heart rate. The interesting thing, and the one they never mention, is I actually take medication that actually artificially suppresses my heart rate. And everything. So I kind of wonder if the Hulk just needs to be on my medication as well.
He is a physician. He can prescribe it to himself. Though one thing I love about this movie, and I wish more superhero movies would do it, we get the entire origin out in 3 minutes. The opening intro, that's the origin, that's everything you need to know. We don't need to spend an entire movie telling you who the Hulk is. We don't need to spend a whole movie telling you about the transformations. It's all there, and that's all you need to know. Let's just get on with the story.
But, you know, this is very much like the Tom Holland Spider-Man movies, in the sense of, you know who Spider-Man is. You have seen Spider-Man's origin story 700 times on film.
I don't need to see Uncle Ben die again.
Yeah, you do not need to see Uncle Ben die again. It's the same thing. Everybody knows why the Hulk turns into the Hulk. Something, something, gamma rays, something, something, don't make me angry, something, something, Hulk. That's all you need to know.
It's like, you know, we don't need to see another Batman origin story or a Superman origin story.
Yeah, nobody needs to see Martha Wayne's pearls go by. Nobody needs to see baby Superman, you know, lifting a truck. Like, we don't need to see that. Give me a minute and a half or less for the newbies in the audience. Their buddy will explain it to them during the opening credit sequence. Let's move on with the story. Now, for somebody like Iron Man, we need an origin story.
Yeah, Iron Man was not a...
For somebody like Black Panther, we might need an origin story. You know, these are not well-known heroes that everybody grew up with, okay? But for the biggie ones, or the ones with a really simple origin story, there are some superheroes that it's just... You know, X-Men, I was born this way. That's it. Like, I have a weird gene in my body. It gives me superpowers. I don't need, like, a big origin story for that. So I do like that they chose that.
One thing that just entered my mind, and since I did mention it, and the Ang Lee Hulk. Ang Lee Hulk's movie ends with Bruce in Brazil, and this movie starts with Bruce in Brazil. We find out why he's in Brazil, because there's a rare flower that grows in Brazil that Bruce believes will be the secret to curing him of the Hulk. And it doesn't work. He makes the potion, the formula that he believes will cure him of his gamma poisoning, as he refers to it as. And it works for like 5 seconds, and his experiment just goes to hell because his blood starts to mutate green.
Yeah, it makes the sample worse.
Yeah.
I do like the joke kind of when he sees the men in the factory harassing the women,
the woman.
He's like in broken Portuguese, he's like, "Don't make me hungry. You wouldn't like me when I'm hungry." And I'm like, "You know what? I have been that hangry before where I'm like, you know that hungry, angry bit where it's like my blood sugar is so low."
I wouldn't be surprised if this was like the first instance of that hunger, anger issue.
You know, it's like.
So, yeah, where is Bruce here? He's working at this soda factory because, you know, you got to make money.
Yeah.
And he is constantly bullied by other workers there because, one, they're a-holes because they bully everyone at the factory. But they specifically call him out for being the only white man working at the factory, calling him gringo.
But also, it's like, it's very obvious he's American. So, like, what is an American doing hiding in a slum in Rio?
Yeah.
That's suspect.
And he doesn't even want to be listed as an official employee, as he's pretty much the janitor at the janitor slash repairman of this factory. And the boss keeps telling him, "You're really good. Let me put you on the payroll, pay you real money." And he just says, "No, no, no." Mostly because if he's on a record, they will find him.
Yeah, and it's like, okay, so you want to be paid under the table. You obviously have skills you are refusing to use. Like, did you murder your family? Are you going to murder us? Like, that's what I'm worried about. Somebody who's not from the area shows up, wants to be paid under the table, obviously is more skilled, but is working like a lower skill job. You are running from something. Yeah,
the lowest skill job at that factory, most likely.
Yeah, you are running from something. You know?
And it is worse because apparently he's been hiding for 5 years, which incidentally, it's been 5 years since Ang Lee's Hulk, another tie-in.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he kind of messes up because he cuts his finger on the wiring of the machine he's repairing, and some of that blood gets into the soda, which, thanks to our Stan Lee cameo, outs out Bruce Banner as being in Brazil to the military.
Because apparently gamma radiation is so potent, and especially Banner's blood is so potent, that a single diluted drop in a bottle of soda will cause an old man to Hulk out.
He can't be the Hulk. I'm the Hulk. Oh, please. You couldn't even change into Bill Bixby.
And we kind of see it later in the movie as one drop of blood falls on Stern's head and he starts mutating.
Yeah, eventually into the leader, which is, wow.
One thing I have to say, putting this into the greater MCU, is that we get references to S.H.I.E.L.D. and the military is using Stark weaponry.
Yeah, which, again, does work this into the canon as well.
Even though Stark isn't making any more weapons, that doesn't mean the weapons that are already out there just disappear.
Well, but it does seem that Stark created this specifically for Hulk control. It's not like Stark was trying to create like battlefield weapons against humans. Like, this was specifically like, we have a Hulk problem, make a thing that will bring down the Hulk non-lethally.
And we see in the Avengers later on that he is a big fan of Bruce Banner, not just Bruce Banner the scientist, but yes, he is a fan of the big Green Rage monster.
Yeah, and we see him creating several Hulk containment products throughout the course of the series. So, yeah. But Ross puts together a military team and he brings in Blonsky to go down to Brazil.
But they make him as a specialist working with the U.S. military in these kind of retrieval situations and combat situations. But they, much like most military missions, they keep the people on the field with not knowing what they're actually getting into. And they make the situation really, really bad because we see Banner in the factory after hours, and the bullies from earlier are just beating him up. Like, they are tired of the nerd, especially when he saves the one woman that works in the factory, even asks her out. And that is like the final straw, and they're just going to jump him after work, which causes him to Hulk out. And in probably one of the best karmic moments, the Hulk just beats the holy hell out of these bullies. Hopefully they learn their lesson, if they're not dead.
Yeah, there's a very high possibility that they are super dead after this encounter. I will say that this is a really good way to introduce the Hulk. This whole thing plays like a horror film, and I love it.
Yeah. Like, you see the eyes turn green, just like in the TV show. You see his body start to change. You hear, it's more menacing because you're hearing it off screen and him's transformation and the growling and
you see one of the military guys sees a single limb kind of dislocate and deform through a night vision camera on the helmet of another, you know, like he's monitoring through one of the guys on the scene. And so you can only partially see it, and it's through night vision. So it's already green tinted, so you can't see his skin turning green. But you can see, like, one of his legs or whatever, like, the knee dislocates, and then it lengthens, and then it grows bigger. It's, you know,
that is one thing that I praise this movie that other movies featuring the Hulk don't have. It's that you hear the bones breaking and the skin stretching, which it's intended to be kind of scary, but I wish they would do that more often in the movies.
Yeah, I mean, there is a true horror element to the Hulk appearing that lets you understand not only why the military guys are afraid of him, but also why Banner is afraid of him.
Yeah.
He says that he doesn't remember a lot, but there's gotta be trauma.
I see him taking a shower later in the movie, and he looks at the shower head and he sees a gun firing at him. So he has some memories of him as himself as the Hulk. He compares being the Hulk as being on acid.
Yeah.
That's a lot of acid to go on that kind of trip.
This is why I want Doc Samson. superheroes in therapy, I'm telling you.
Like, after all of this happened, after the military gets their collective heinies kicked by the Hulk, Blonsky has questions. What was that? What is going on? What are you not telling me?
I actually like this speech from Blonsky because he wants General Ross to know, you are the bad guy here, sir. Do not let that escape your notice. Mm-hmm. You are responsible for every single death in that room, but that is your right. You are the general, but just know all those deaths are on your hands. Now, because he very specifically says, I have been in this situation before. You go in there blind because somebody chose not to tell you something that could have saved a bunch of lives. That is him telling Ross, you got a bunch of guys killed right now.
And it implying that we only went in because you made a mistake and we're the cleanup crew.
Yeah. And then he says, but that's okay because that's the job you sign up for. Basically, he's like, you got all those guys killed. That's on you. But also, they knew that could happen.
When you go into the military, yeah, any mission could be your last mission.
You know, he was kind of being like, well, you know, you're not entirely a murderer, but you did F up pretty royally. You know, it's not an entire, you know, complete accusation, but it is a like, you do bear that responsibility. So I do like that scene, but then he's like, I want a rematch, but you're going to tell me the entire story this time so that I'm prepared.
Mm-hmm. And then we get the story of the Super Soldier program. The first mention of the Super Soldier program in the MCU, if you're going by release order.
Yeah, because this is before we ever got a Captain America movie.
And Blonsky knows about it. It's possible he knew about Captain America. If we go by the later movies, Captain America was a well-known figure in the 40s.
Yeah.
And he wants some of it. He wants to, and somehow the U.S. military was able to get some variation of the super soldier serum.
Well, here's the other thing that lets us know that this movie is still considered canon in the MCU. This movie introduces a plot thread that they're still using.
We just saw a whole series about super soldiers.
Yeah, this whole thing introduces a couple of related ideas. Mm-hmm. One, ever since the 1940s, at least, the U.S. has been trying to create super soldier serum that is stable. Boy, that is a lot of S's. And failing, okay? Steve Rogers is really the only kind of stable one that they admit exists. Most of the other people have some kind of issue with it. The other thing is that anybody that wants to take super soldier serum should never be allowed to access super soldier serum.
As we've seen not only with Blonsky, but with John Walker and to a degree the Winter Soldier.
Yeah. Anybody that you're like, hey, you want a shot of this? And they go, yeah, that sounds good. Should never, ever be allowed to have it.
Mm-hmm.
And it starts right here. It starts with Blonsky.
And yeah, and it works for Blonsky. He actually, for a little while, is able to keep up with the Hulk later in the movie.
After his after the fight in Brazil, Bruce wakes up after he comes out of the Hulk state, and he's in Guatemala. He doesn't know how he got to Guatemala, but he's speaking Portuguese, and the guy's like, I don't speak Portuguese. And he's like, where am I? You're in Guatemala. Oops.
Yeah, he gets, and he treks, because we did skip over, but he has his communications with Stearns in that they need the raw data of what happened in the original experiment if they are hopeful to cure him. And the only place that the data is in the college that they were working at, which is Culver City University. So he has to get somehow from Brazil, where he was at, back to the United States. And we see him in Mexico first. So he has to fly. He kind of has to go under the radar. He flies into Mexico, which we do hear the Lonely Man theme as he's kind of walking through Mexico. Beautiful timing, beautiful rendition.
Yeah, I'm a little annoyed that they didn't use it later in the movie, because to me, the place that you should have used it is when he's walking in the rain by the side of the road, because that's kind of when they would have used it in the TV series.
Roll credits.
Right before Betty picks him up. But
yeah.
Minor quibble, they used the song That's All I Care About.
And he eventually sneaks back into the U.S., back to Culver University, only to find that, he has to sneak back in because people still know his face. Because he's, again, at the time, he was one of the high-ranking people at the university. So he kind of had to sneak in. Eventually sneaks in by going to an old friend of his that he used to go on dates with Betty with to get pizza.
Who owns the Italian restaurant.
Yeah, so it's implied that he and Betty used to frequent there a lot, because he says he still calls them kids. And he kind of takes a pizza there. This is where we get our Lou Ferrigno cameo as a security guard. But eventually he gets into the system at Culver University to find that he has been erased from all records, and his data has been erased. Like, the data that he needs to cure himself is gone, seized by the military. And all traces of Bruce Banner ever working at that university is gone. So, yeah, clearly the military is hiding something, and we know what they're hiding. Yeah.
Yeah, the thing is that Bruce didn't know what the experiment was.
Ross says it was protection against radiation poisoning.
Yeah, and he talked Betty into talking Bruce into being a test subject. And she also thought that it was, and it was only after the accident that she found out the real purpose of the program and, you know.
Stop talking to her father.
Bruce never really knew, which I think is in the kind of meta ethics of the MCU, why Bruce Banner never became a complete villain. Mm-hmm. You know, he's got the Hulk personality, which you can sometimes say is kind of villainous because of the anger.
Very feral.
Yeah, a very feral kind of character, but it's why the Hulk in general is generally thought of as a hero, is because Banner's intentions were always pure. Mm-hmm. Banner did not want power.
He wanted to help people.
He wanted to help people, unlike Blonsky, unlike Ross, unlike John Walker, unlike some of the other people who have come into contact with various permutations of this super soldier program. Sort of like Isaiah Bradley that we see in Falcon and Winter Soldier, he didn't know that he was part of the Super Soldier program, which is, I think, the other thing that kind of saves him in the meta narrative.
The only one who ever knew he was part of that program was Steve.
Yeah, and Steve agreed because he thought he was helping people. He didn't do it for power. He didn't do it. He did it because the Nazis were a threat. He wanted to save people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there's something interesting in the MCU about the idea that one's internal motives contributes to whether or not the serum works on you. That there's this weird X factor?
We find out in Captain America, the movie, and we'll get to it, is that the super soldier serum makes what's good in you better and what's bad in you worse. If you are a genuine good person, you will become a better person. If you are a terrible person, you become the worst person in the world.
There already were two sides to Bruce Banner when he got dosed. And we know this from that Peter David plot. You know, that's what Doc Samson uncovers, is that, you know, Bruce Banner's childhood gave him this angry side of him, and that's what the Hulk is.
They don't really go into, again, it's something that was in the 2003 movie.
You know. Yeah.
He was abused by his father as a child. One thing that from the comics, I'm surprised that any version of the movie actually kept.
Yeah. And so I could see that being moved over in here. That's why I would really love to see a prequel version where they talk about how Banner actually reconciled both sides of his psyche. Because I think it would be an interesting thing to explore, and it would actually reconcile the Ang Lee version of the film and the Edward Norton version of the film, which I think would also be good for the MCU. Because that is the one thing the Ang Lee version did correctly, in my opinion. But I think it would actually bring it into this kind of meta-narrative they've got going on, that the thing that makes the super soldier serum work on people is what you have inside your mind, I guess, or inside your heart or soul. Or
example, again, going back to Falcon and Winter Soldier, is Carly Morgenthau. How she intended to be a super soldier to help people, but she got corrupt with power and just I don't mind killing people because they're not integral to my plan by the end of the series.
Yeah, and also, you know, you bring up the question of Winter Soldier, but the thing is that by the time Bucky received the serum, he had already been brainwashed.
Mm.
So at that point, is the serum reacting to his natural, you well, know, the guy that Steve was best friends with? Or is it reacting to the implanting that Hydra put in there?
Mm.
Which is an interesting question, and it may be why he's kind of successful after the Wakandans help him, mm. you know? So I like that kind of weird... I'm not even sure that the writers in the MCU have thought about it that deeply, but it is kind of an interesting question.
Mm-hmm.
But... So the thing about it is that Banner kind of meets up again with Betty accidentally when Betty shows up at this restaurant
with Doc Samson, her boyfriend,
with Doc Samson, and sees a ghost, you know, basically hanging out in the kitchen.
Yeah, she tells the owner, "Tell me the truth. Did I see who I thought I saw?" And obviously he tells her because we see them reconcile. She drives in her car. She picks him up while he's walking in the rain and they reconcile. They catch up. And Betty has the data from the university of the project. She is the only one that has this data, saying that she was able to sneak in to the lab and download it before the military erased everything.
Smart woman. Good mm-hmm. for her. Love it.
So now that they have everything that they need, you know, the data that they need, they can send that to Stearns to potentially develop a cure for his condition, as it would be called in Avengers. But it is also it's also implied that Bruce and Betty still have longing feelings for each other. Like, yes, they're sleeping in separate beds, but it's clear that there's something that's still there between the two. Again, I'm pretty sure Natasha would want to know something about that.
Well, the thing is that they didn't break up. He went on the run, and I think she thought he was dead.
Possible. Again, that's another reference to the old 70s series.
Yeah.
Where Bruce needs to let the world believe that he's dead in order to protect everybody.
Yeah. The thing is that Doc Samson is kind of suspicious of who is this guy, and
who's this guy coming in on my girl?
And so he calls General Ross, and they show up on the campus as Bruce and Betty are trying to get some more information from the university. But unfortunately, Blonsky slips, you know.
He jumps the gun.
Yeah, he jumps the gun a little too early because he is itching to get a hold of Banner. He wants his rematch. And Banner runs and they end up triggering his transformation.
They throw gas grenades at him, and that seemingly does nothing. It is when he sees Betty being restrained by the military that really he starts to Hulk out.
Now, the interesting thing is that there's a friend I usually watch these things with, and that friend during this was like, "You ever notice that for this entire movie, there just needs to be like a kind of generic guy standing next to the bad guys saying, no, don't, you'll just make him angry." Because no matter what they do, that needs to be the response. Like, throw a gas canister. No, don't, you'll just make him angry.
Shoot Grab the green Betty. Monster. You'll just make him angry. He's making me more angry.
Shoot him with the gunship. No, don't. You'll just, like, not even, like, in a scared way. Just, like, an annoyed, like, you know, tired kind of way. Like, this isn't going to work, guys. You'll just make him angry.
And this is the scene that we see not only later in this film, but in Iron Man 2, as this becomes a new story, as there's this green hulking rage monster attacking Culver University.
And the interesting thing is that the comic that inspired this month for us suggests that the person we don't see in the film, just off screen, is Black Widow.
Yeah, after she takes care of Tony's issues, because canonically, this, again, like I said, this particular part that we're watching, that we're at in the movie, is after Iron Man 2. So Natasha's job with Tony is done, and now her new mission is keep an eye on Banner.
And she happens to be just walking into the quad as they fire the gas canisters into the walkway.
Just off screen.
Yeah, just off screen. And she witnesses this entire fight. And Fury tells her, do not let General Ross take the Hulk either dead or alive. I do not want Ross in control of the Hulk. And
it feels like, you know, at that point, Fury already has Hulk in mind for the Avenger Initiative.
Yeah. And as Natasha is running to kind of intercept Ross, she takes a building to the face and is kind of knocked out of the fight and can't make it, and sees the rest of the scene play out without being able to intervene. This scene shakes her so much that she immediately goes back. Not this scene, but the events of this movie is the first time we really see Black Widow shaken.
Of all the things that she's seen now, you know, even the stuff that we know now and whatever stuff we're going to find out in the movie, in her own movie, that this green rage monster is what shakes her. And it kind of does come back in the Avengers.
And knowing how her relationship with Banner grows, mm-hmm. It is interesting that this is how it starts. And I kind of wish that we could get like an insert scene.
Somebody animate that, one of you fan animators out there.
but we do get a big battle, and honestly, I think this is the best choreographed battle in the film.
Especially since one of the actors is a CG motion capture creature, and then the other guy is, you know, Tim Roth on steroids.
For 2008, this was really good, both in the mocap and the CG animation. It does not hold up quite as well today, unfortunately. Yeah. You can see the fraying around the edges a little too much, unfortunately, but it's all right.
It shows that a super soldier could keep up with the Hulk. So if Captain America wanted to, he could take down the Hulk for a little while. Not for very long.
The only problem is that the comics have established that Hulk is theoretically infinitely strong.
The madder he gets, the stronger he gets.
Yeah, whereas Captain America's strength does have an upper limit. So all you have to do is just anger Hulk enough that he tops out just a little above Captain America.
He can pull a helicopter.
Yeah, but Hulk can actually rip a helicopter in half with his bare hands. So.
And use it as boxing gloves.
Yeah. But anyway, this is a really well choreographed fight. I do like it. They bring in those sonic weapons that we see at the beginning of the movie as sketches that Stark built. Mm-hmm. They just make Hulk matter. So as I said,
This is the first instance in this movie of Hulk learning, as he starts using the debris from the other vehicles as shields from the sonic weapons.
And as weapons in themselves, and as tools, because he uses them as sort of like picks to pull himself forward. He uses them to drive into the ground and uses them to pull himself forward.
And there's a little bit of Bruce in the Hulk as he goes to protect Betty as the military, the gunship is crashing down after he knocks into it.
Well, the thing is you're skipping forward a little ahead, because as he's being attacked by the sonic blast, he does seem like he's going to succumb to it, but then he sees, once again, they're manhandling Betty behind the sonic cannons, and that's what angers him again, and that in turn gives him the strength to resist the sonic cannons, which causes him to destroy the sonic cannons, which causes the gunship to come in, which puts Betty in danger again, which gives him the strength to destroy the sonic. It's really an interesting escalation of events that all centers around Betty.
And it shows, again, that little bit of Bruce in the Hulk that still loves Betty.
Yeah. And it also comes back to it all being General Ross's fault.
Yeah, I mean, when the explosion happens and he thinks Betty's dead, in that one moment, William Hurt's acting in that one scene is amazing. When he thinks Betty's dead, no! And it's like that face that William Hurt has, amazing acting. But again, and the stare down between the two, the stare down between Ross and the Hulk, as he just bores a hole right through him with those green eyes. You did this. And Ross is just nodding his head. Yeah. Yeah, I did.
Yeah, that little nod as Hulk is holding her body. And it's just like Hulk just looks at him like, no, I'm taking it from here. And that little nod of Ross being like, yeah, no, I screwed this up. You take it from here. Yeah, no, that's fine. I'm not going to bother. You got it. It's so good, and it's wordless, but you get that whole scene, and there's so many layers of meaning there.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Blonsky decides to come, you know, run up and takes a Hulk foot straight to the face, and then he takes a tree straight to the face, because Hulk just kicks him right into a tree and shatters every bone in his body.
And he looks wrecked. But the super soldier serum in him heals him within days. He's already back to fighting shape. But the super soldier serum that Blonsky has is not perfect. As it starts to, yes, it heals his bones a little too much. As his bones start to protrude out of his back, his spine is just mutating.
Yeah.
But Blonsky feels great. As he says, I feel like a monster.
Meanwhile, we get Hulk takes Betty off to a cave nearby. And I love the little bit of humor we get as, like, the Betty kind of startles him and he bonks his head into the cave and then he bonks his head again. And then lightning crashes and he hurls a boulder into the sky.
It's almost like a hammer is falling out of the sky at this point.
Yeah, which is interesting because it probably is, just in a different part of the U.S.
I think canonically that's what's happening. But yeah, there are people who will say that you can see Mjolnir falling through the sky. You cannot. You just see the rock that the Hulk just threw. That's what you're seeing falling.
But it is funny. A lot of people at this point make jokes about, like, shut up, Thor, she's my girl, you know, like that.
Yeah, and it's a very tender moment as Betty is kind of calming down the Hulk. You know, it's just thunder, it's just rain, it's not going to hurt you. You have a dog. When it thunderstorms, your dog goes crazy.
Oh, yeah.
So I see it as some very similar to that. Like, if you have a dog and they're yelling at the thunderstorm, it's like, it's just rain, it's just thunder, it's okay. The Hulk is just a big puppy.
He kind of is. The interesting thing is that this scene is very similar to what they do later with Natasha.
Yeah.
With her, how she calms down the Hulk.
So it's getting real low.
Yeah.
Yeah, but eventually morning comes and Banner is back to being himself. And the two just get a hotel room.
But we do see, like you said earlier, a little bit of his PTSD as he has some flashbacks in the shower.
He has some memory of being the Hulk.
Yeah. He tells her later that he does have some memories, but that it's very fuzzy and far away and like a remembered acid trip. You're not really in control, but you do have some vague memories of what happened to you. We do get another kind of joke from the comic as Betty comes in with some stuff she bought at the store, including replacement clothing for Banner, and she brings in giant stretchy purple pants.
The purple pants.
I am so mad he did not put on those purple pants. I love the purple pants. Thank you very much. Put them on, Bruce.
But, I mean, it's kind of been it's been a joke in the movie. We kind of skipped over it of him buying clothes. He specifically asked for stretchy clothes because he knows it's going to happen.
But he never asked for stretchy shirts. Like, why does he not buy, like, big T-shirts?
So they're on the run. Betty and Bruce, you know, they get rid of all their credit cards. They get rid of all of their cell phone. Again, it's a funny scene where Betty's, well, can I have my makeup? Can I have my watch? Can I have my... It is one of the few funny scenes in this movie.
Yeah.
And Liv Tyler is a very funny actress when she wants to be.
Yeah. They do pawn a necklace from her mom that is apparently the only thing that she has left of her mom. Bruce gets it back for her later, which is nice.
But they've apparently the military is now working with S.H.I.E.L.D. They're using S.H.I.E.L.D.'s computers to monitor for Bruce's email address, which they end up finding because he emails the data to Stearns.
Yeah, and they decide that they have to go meet Stearns. So they end up going to New York. We're finally in New York City in a Marvel movie. Finally.
Yeah.
But they end up at Stearns's office at his university in New York. And he says that he developed a possible antidote based on a blood sample that Banner had sent him. He tries it out on Banner, and it does seem to work, but he says... Yeah, I don't think that's, like, killed the Hulk for good. It probably only stopped this particular transformation. Like, you may have to take it each time.
Yeah. But we also at this point learned that Stearns is not exactly on the up and up because he's been replicating the blood sample for more experimentation. Definitely sowing the seeds of what would become the leader.
And he has, like, a giant frickin' warehouse with hundreds of thousands of blood bags.
And he tries to defend it. Oh, we could cure diseases. We could make people invulnerable to pain and all that stuff. And it's like, no, we need to destroy every blood sample. We need to destroy all of this because the military wants to make more of me, and we cannot let them. And Stearns is just not listening to him at all.
And as they're arguing about it, we see that General Ross has found out where Banner is. They have set up snipers. And they dart Bruce in the neck.
Mm-hmm.
Fun!
Just off screen, Black Widow has just made it to New York.
And she tells Fury, like, oh, crap, I got here just a second too late. Ross has Banner all Hannibal Lecter style strapped to a gurney. Fun. They take Bruce out on a gurney and they load him and Betty into a helicopter.
Before all of that, though, before all of that, we get Blonsky trying to get a rise out of Bruce again, smacking him. Change! Let him out! I want him again! And he doesn't because, again, the medication...
Yeah, he's still got that antidote in him.
Yeah, it's still in his blood. Yeah, the antidote is still in his bloodstream. And even Ross says, if you took him from me, I'll put you in a hole and you'll never get out. Because, again, Ross wants more Hulks that he can use as soldiers.
Yeah. But as they're taking Banner away, Blonsky stays behind and he starts pressuring Stearns. He's like, no, you are going to inject me with all of the Banner blood. Like, I want as much Hulk as you can shove into my veins.
He even said, and yeah, I would, but I don't know what you've already taken. You look like you've taken something. And if we mix Banner's blood with whatever you're taking, we don't know what could come up, what could happen. Blonsky doesn't care. He wants to be the Hulk. And if he has to take Banner's blood to do it, he's going to do it.
This does lead to another funny moment where Stearns is like, we don't know what could come out. It could be an abomination. So there we go. We've got our villain name.
Yeah.
And then I like that Blonsky, like, just lifts up Stearns, like, by his neck. And Stearns like, oh, I didn't say I wouldn't do it. I just said I needed informed consent. And you've given consent. Let's go. Like, let's create an abomination. I am down. I do not want to die. Thank you very much.
I mean, he probably was a few steps away from doing it already, considering the experiments he was already doing with Banner's blood.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I don't think Stearns really needed violence to convince him. I think he was probably wanting money, but violence works as well.
And as you can expect, the irradiated blood of Banner mixed with the modified super soldier serum already in him just mutates him into the Abomination. And first thing he does is knock Stearns right into the machine as the canister with the blood breaks. There's a big gash in its head as the Banner blood drops right into him, causing an instant mutation into its head. And he's smiling because this is something that he wants, apparently.
Well, I think it's more, you know how when Blonsky gets the blood, it starts making his muscles bigger and his heart beat faster. Mm. The doctor earlier says that the serum, he's only seen a heart like that in a racehorse and stuff like that. Mm. Well, where does it land in Blonsky?
His head.
His brain.
Yeah, making him more intelligent.
Making him more intelligent. And he's already a smarty doctor, science-y guy, so that's probably why he's smiling.
And normally this would be the last we see of Stearns, but in the comic, Black Widow shows up just as the Abomination is breaking out of Stearns' office, runs up and sees Stearns already half mutated into the leader.
And they finally call him the leader in the comic, which means that years later, the comic writer realized they never actually called him the leader in the movie and was like, well, I'm going to retcon this thing that we've forgotten for like 4 years.
And he said he's going to be the leader of the world with his massively intelligent mind. And
yeah.
Black Widow just shoots him in the leg and arrests him.
Yeah.
That is the end of the leader in the MCU.
So far.
I was really bummed we never got a sequel because I was a big fan of the Incredible Hulk cartoon, the 90s cartoon.
Yeah.
And the leader was like the main bad guy in that show. I wanted to see that on screen.
That would have been cool. The other thing is that she shoots him in the leg and then she says, I'm going to go to the roof and put up flares so that you can see the building I'm on and know where to pick up the prisoner. She goes to the roof to set up the flares, and then there's an explosion several blocks behind her, and she goes, what is that? Meaning she's witnessing what's going on in the other half of the story, which is that the Abomination has escaped the building, and gone into Harlem and started just wrecking things. All the shiz that can be wrecked is being wrecked by the Abomination, who is just screaming, "Bring me the Hulk." General Ross on his helicopter starts getting radioed in from a bunch of guys like, "There's the Hulk has escaped. The Hulk has escaped." And Ross is looking at Banner and Banner's looking at Ross. He's like, "Nope, that's impossible." There's like, "There is a giant creature down here wrecking all the shiz. Come help. We are getting stomped."
Turn around and there's Bruce says it has to be him. He has to go, one, because Blonsky wants him. He wants the Hulk. And two, as he says, "I created this. We created this." Implying him and Ross. Like, the experiments that we did caused this to happen, so it is our responsibility to neutralize this.
Yeah.
And also, it is probably one of the most heroic speeches that this version of Bruce Banner gives.
Yeah, this is absolutely, because we saw Blonsky tell Ross that all of this was his fault at the beginning of the movie. You consistently withhold information from people you are putting in danger, and it consistently gets them killed, hurt, maimed, whatever. Mm-hmm. And Banner stands up at the end of the film and says, "We need to take responsibility for this. This is our mess, and we gotta clean it up." And by we, he means me, because Ross can't do anything about it.
Until they turn him into a Red Hulk. I'm still waiting on that.
But that is the thing that makes Banner the hero in this movie. Like, it's technically not Bruce Banner's fault. Like, he's the victim in this. Mm-hmm. But when the time comes, he's still willing to take responsibility for something that's sort of he's connected to, but he didn't choose it.
Yeah. And that's brilliant acting on Edward Norton's part, because as much as I love Mark Ruffalo's Hulk, I don't know if he could pull this scene off.
Yeah. And it's... He convinces General Ross to turn the helicopter around, and he says, "You know, no, I gotta jump out of here, you know."
It's that adrenaline rush, yeah.
Yeah, it's that adrenaline rush. It's gonna, my heart rate will turn me into the Hulk. And they're like, "Well, what if you can't turn into the Hulk?" And then he's like, "Well, then I'll go splat and it'll blow me away."
Yeah, it's Betty saying, "You don't even know if you're," because he, according to them, he still has that antidote in him.
Yeah.
And again, the scene that gets referenced in Thor Ragnarok is Bruce jumping out of the plane, trying to change, and failing. It is the closest thing to an S-bomb we get in this movie, is Bruce falling down, not changing, and goes, "Oh, shh!" And just going splat.
And another really good scene from Edward Norton, because the look on his face as he realizes, like, my heart rate is not spiking. Uh-oh.
And he goes splat on the ground. But it is very interesting how big a crater Bruce gets, because a normal person would not make that big a crater.
Yeah.
Implying that he may have changed right before he hit the ground.
Well, there's also some question on whether or not Bruce Banner himself kind of holds the mass of the Hulk within him, even when he isn't changed.
Mm.
It goes back and forth in the comics, but there's been some times in the comics where, like, that Bruce Banner himself may be somehow internally more dense than a normal human.
I can buy it.
It's
comic books.
Yeah, it depends on who's writing it, whether or not that holds true. So, you know, whatever. But yeah, I do like that that it does seem that he burrows kind of really far into the ground before coming back out as the Hulk.
And as Deadpool would say, big CGI fight. But yes, this is 13-year-old CGI, and not all of it holds up. But it's actually a pretty good fight between Hulk and Abomination.
The first part of the fight on the ground is a pretty good fight.
They're just charging at each other, and then Abominationberg with the spear.
Yeah, and Hulk ripping the cop car in half and using it as gloves.
I first saw that in a Hulk video game I had, and I've wanted that ever since, and that made me happy.
However, I will say that most of this final culminating fight between Abomination and Hulk is not that great. It is frequently difficult to tell exactly where they are.
Because it's night.
Some of the CGI doesn't always hold up. And I know that they kept it dark enough to hide some of the edges of the CGI kind of thing.
That's usually what they do, yeah. If it's usually a big CGI fight at night, it's usually because they're trying to hide something.
I did not like the fact that Ross was willing to do things like use a machine gun on a helicopter to fire into apartment buildings. Like, are you kidding me? I know you're trying to help the Hulk and bring down the Abomination, but even for you, man, that is wildly
reckless.
Reckless to do that. I mean, good grief. This fight just started. You have not had time to evacuate anybody from these apartments. Also, you know that a gunship will not hurt the Hulk. You just saw this within 24 hours, man.
And you think it's going to do something to the Abomination?
Yeah. And I do believe those are lower caliber bullets in that gun than were on that gunship. This is not going to work.
So yeah, the two Hulks here fight. Eventually,
On a roof. Yeah. At one point, he does see that Hulk gets angrier and stronger when you put Betty in danger, so he grabs onto the helicopter and tries to bring it down.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually succeeds. But he brings down the helicopter, and boy, plot armor is more effective than regular armor, because all of the soldiers are wearing armor. The only two people in the helicopter not wearing armor are the Rosses. They are the only two people to survive this crash. Abomination ends up injuring Hulk and setting fire to the helicopter. And Hulk is like, nope, and claps and sends a giant airwave to put out the fire.
Thunderclap.
Yeah, and saves Betty that way. Mm-hmm. And also General Ross, but who cares about General Ross? We get the big giant moment where Abomination is about to put the smackdown on Hulk, and he grabs the chain with the whatever and swings it around, and Hulk's like, I have had enough of this. And of course we get the final big line, Hulk smash, and he smashes the roof, which causes Abomination's foot to fall in the crack, and he loses his balance, and Hulk grabs the chain and starts to choke him out, and Betty's like, no, we don't kill the things we can't control and created, we will let him live.
This won't bite him in the butt afterwards.
Well, the thing is I want to know what Betty's plan was, because the thing is that Hulk has a trigger. You make him angry, he turns into the Hulk. You calm him down, he turns into Banner, a reasonable human who, if you keep him calm, is a controllable person. Does Abomination have a trigger in the context of the movie? I'm not even talking about the comic.
I don't think so. I think he just transforms, and that's just him.
I mean, is he, like, full-time Abomination? Because that's a totally different thing if he is.
We don't know enough, again.
Yeah.
This is the only time we've ever seen this character until they released the freaking She-Hulk show.
Yeah, so what is Betty's plan? I mean, I'm sorry, I am not generally for, like, death penalty, but seriously, what is Betty's plan?
Jess doesn't want to see, in her eyes, Bruce kill a man.
Yeah, I mean, I understand, but seriously, so Bruce kind of just knocks out Abomination, and then he poses and does a roar, and...
1 foot pin, 1, 2, 3, the winner is the Hulk!
Yay!
Dun, 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 da, 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 wrong Hulk.
He is a real American.
So, and there's this, and after the fight, there's this great scene with Hulk just going up to Betty as she's crying, kind of touching her face, and he just says, "Betty," and then just leaves. Like, there's still that bit of Bruce in the Hulk that, and he just, he knows he can't be with her, and he just goes off. And it's a nice scene, honestly. It's a very heartwarming scene for a big green rage monster and the woman he loves.
Yeah. We see that Banner has run away to British Columbia.
Mm-hmm.
And he has gotten Betty's necklace back somehow.
He gets it in an envelope, so implies that he had it mailed to him.
Yeah, that he's sent money back and gotten it mailed to him, and now he's mailing it to Betty. Yeah. Mm. But it's still a nice gesture.
Yeah. And the final scene of Banner is he's doing his breathing exercises and willfully turns into the Hulk?
At least we see his eyes go green and he smiles.
And Days Without Incident counts down to zero. So that scene, when I first saw it, was him trying to control the Hulk, or at least control the rage outs. Again, this does come back later in the I'm Always Angry scene in Avengers, that he's just angry all the time. That's probably the only way he can control the Hulk.
Maybe. Yeah. Well, I think that it might be a thing of, like, it is a useful skill to be able to turn into the Hulk. I mean, if you are threatened, being able to turn into the Hulk and defend yourself is a very useful skill.
Mm-hmm.
If someone else is in danger, you know, the Hulk can be useful. And of course, as we see later, you know, just Banner being the Hulk full time.
Yeah.
Also is useful. The merging of the Banner brain and the Hulk body, you know.
The brain and the brawn, yeah.
So where they were going with it, if it was going to be that Banner can transform into the Hulk at will, or Banner will be the Hulk full time, but with Banner's brain, you know, I don't know. We never got to see that vision. But of course, we do have the one final scene.
Which was supposed to be a post-credit scene. And according to Marvel, they still consider this a post-credit scene. It is just that Universal put this at the end of the movie. For the same reason they put the animation, the big title sequence at the beginning of the movie. Because what's the point of doing all of this if your audience is already walking out the door?
Because Universal knows that audiences are doofuses.
So we get the, quote, post-credit scene of Ross, General Ross, at a bar, drinking his sorrows away. When who comes in but Robert Downey Jr., Tony Stark. They kind of question each other, like, hey, you've been in a lot of trouble lately. Yeah, you've been in a lot of trouble, too. Which, depending on when you want to put this movie, could be any number of things. Again, this came out months after the first Iron Man movie. So from the original perspective, at least me in the theater, oh, he just outed himself as Iron Man. He's got enough problems. He doesn't need to think about the Hulk. But in the Fury's Big Week continuity, this scene happens after Iron Man 2. And Stark says to Ross, I'm putting the team together. Clearly sowing the seed, planting the seeds of the Avengers. And it is a nice reference to the comic in that the Avengers were originally put together to stop the Hulk. And that started the rumors that this Avengers movie that they're planning was going to have the Hulk as the villain. As in the comic book, the Hulk is manipulated by Loki into running on a rampage, which causes all of the heroes to come together, form the Avengers, and there we are. If that would have been the film instead of what we got, I'm not saying it would have been a worse film, but it would definitely be a very different movie, and the MCU would have been very different going forward.
Yeah, the thing is it's so difficult to look back and try to remember what we knew at the time.
Yeah.
But at the time, you know, it's so weird going back. You know, we talked about it when we did Iron Man, mm-hmm. that we see Nick Fury come in and he's like, I'm putting together a team. And we're like, wait a minute. Do they want to like eventually do like a whole Avengers movie? They can't want to do like a whole Avengers movie.
A lot of people were thinking that the Avengers were just going to be in a future Iron Man movie.
Iron Man 3, The Avengers.
Yeah.
And then it started to be like, well, next we're doing a Hulk movie. And it's like, wait, Iron Man's in the Hulk? Wait, is Iron Man going to fight the Hulk? Like, they started the Avengers to fight the Hulk. Is Iron Man going to get a bunch of people? Is Iron Man 2 going to be like
Iron recruitment? Man, yeah.
Iron Man getting a bunch of people together to fight the Hulk, you know?
Yeah.
And then it's like, you know, Iron Man 2 comes out and then you're like, wait, is that Black Widow? Wait, are we going to have, you know, and then it's like Thor comes out and you're like, wait a minute. You know,
here's Thor. Oh, wait, what is Hawkeye doing in Thor?
Yeah. And it's so bizarre kind of how it built. And then it starts to be like, you know, wait, what is the glowy blue thing that keeps showing up?
Yeah.
You know, and then like by the end, you're like, okay, wait, we're actually going to get like an Avengers movie. You know, because then they start doing, like, we're going to have a movie and it's going to be Captain America, the first Avenger. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh, crap. You know.
Who knew?
And then you're like, okay, so we're going to get, like, really get a legit Avengers movie. You know,
they're
and,
all in on this. Marvel is all in on doing this universe.
And then, you know, when, I mean, to skip ahead for a movie that's like 10 years old, but, you know, you get to the end of the first Avengers movie and, you know, there's freaking Thanos.
Yeah.
And you're like, are we getting Infinity War?
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh, they're really all in on this. And now we're getting things where it's like, well, if you want to watch the next Doctor Strange movie, I hope you watched WandaVision and watch. And you start to wonder if it's a little much, but as a Marvel fan, I'm like, I don't care if it's a little much. Make mine Marvel and let me drown in it.
Yeah. Like, and we have one more nugget that we need to talk
about. Oh, yeah,
about.
Yeah. Sorry, I skipped the gun on that. We need to...
Well, we're not done yet. I saved this for the end because it is one more thing that connects this movie to the greater MCU. If you have Thor on Blu-ray, there's a short on there called The Consultant. Now, in that short, we see our favorite S.H.I.E.L.D. agent Kiki's favorite S.H.I.E.L.D. agent, Agent Coulson, meeting up with our favorite secret Hydra agent, Agent Stillwell, to discuss the fact that Ross wants to put Blonsky in the Avengers.
Because Ross is full of good ideas.
Both Coulson and Stillwell both realize that's a bad idea. We do not want Blonsky on the Avengers.
When even Hydra realizes your bad idea is a bad idea.
Yeah. So they have to figure out a plan to make sure that this doesn't happen. So they decide to send the consultant. Who is the consultant? Well, you find this out. I believe it is in the Avengers where Tony says that he works with S.H.I.E.L.D. as a consultant. So Tony Stark meeting up with General Ross was a plan by S.H.I.E.L.D. to make sure that Ross doesn't want Blonsky in the Avengers. Because Tony was going to annoy General Ross. Because he's good at that.
Yeah, they wanted to send somebody that would annoy Ross so much that he would want nothing to do with the Avengers. And I love that this short kind of comes in two parts. They show, Coulson's, talk at the beginning of, like, I'm going to send the consultant. And then they actually show the scene from Incredible Hulk. Mm-hmm. Of Tony walking in and talking to Ross. They show the scene in full, which mm-hmm. is kind of interesting. And then they go back to Coulson talking. And Stillwell's like, what happened? And he's like, well, the consultant annoyed him so much that he left the bar or something. Or he tried to get him kicked out of the bar. So Stark just bought the bar and is having it demolished. It was like Ross's favorite bar or something. So
that is petty on a next level.
Yeah. So I love that, like Tony just buys Ross's favorite, like local bar.
Yeah.
And bulldozes it just to piss Ross off.
This kind of does bite him in the butt when it comes to the Sokovia Accords later on.
Yeah, because Ross is out to hurt Stark at this point.
And the Avengers in general.
Yeah.
As we, again, not only Civil War, but Infinity War, Ross is just arrest the Avengers.
That is true. The interesting thing is that I don't know why they never tried to kind of have Ross, honorably retired. Because by that point, they can prove that Ross has been doing a lot of underhanded stuff. Like, he may not have been officially working with Hydra or whatever, but he's been doing a lot of unethical things in the name of the government at that point.
And it worked in his favor. Again, he's now the Secretary of State.
Yeah, but before he got to that point, shouldn't they have realized that Ross was too much of a loose cannon?
Maybe they liked the fact that he was a loose cannon. I don't know. I mean, we don't know a lot about what happened because they never returned to these characters until much later on.
It just seems like Fury would have attempted to make sure that Ross could not do more damage, like create another Hulk. He's already created two by that point. Mm-hmm. And while one of them did end up being a useful part of the Avengers, he does occasionally go rogue and cause a lot of trouble.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why Fury didn't have a contingency plan for Ross.
I think, again, even Fury has bosses, as we find out with the World Security Council.
So he had a contingency plan for the security council.
Yeah.
I mean, he did.
By ignoring them.
Yeah. I mean, that is a contingency plan. Let's be honest.
But it's like, I think it's just the people above Fury wanted Ross. So, you know, his hands were kind of tied. At least, again, this is me from my own fanboy brain. I have no proof of this. I'm just going by what's on the screen. And if Ross to still have a position of power, someone in a higher position of power must really like him.
Maybe. I don't know.
So let's wrap this all up. Incredible Hulk 2008. Does it have the magic?
I think it did. I think it was hampered a little bit by having the Ang Lee version come before it and by not having the full backing of Marvel at the time.
I'm going to say mostly yes. This movie starts out very slow. That first half hour is very sluggish. But once it gets going, it really works as a not only as a superhero movie, but as a nice character piece for the character of Bruce Banner. But
watch it. If you haven't seen it in a while, go give it a chance. It's probably better than you remember.
Yeah, it definitely should be. If you're one of those people who are planning to watch the MCU movies, all of them, yes, do not skip on the Hulk.
Yeah.
So let's move on to next week. Fury's big month continues as we go into Iron Man 2. Yeah, we're getting a new War Machine. We got Whiplash. The first appearance of Black Widow. It's going to be awesome.
Yep, and it's going to be funnier than this movie was.
Because Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah.
So we will talk to you all then. Bye.
Bye. Don't let the magic stop here.
Join our conversation online on Facebook at Rewatching the Magic.
Twitter at Rewatch the Magic.
And of course, new episodes every week at rewatchingthemagic.podbean.com.
Remember, the magic is for everyone.
It only stops if you let it.